This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. The top business stories of the day. We begin with a story that's carried on the front pages of The Sun this morning, Bleak Outlook. And this is relates to jobs. According to the Malaysian Employers Federation, Executive Director Dato' Samsudin Bardan, he says 50,000 Malaysians are expected to lose their jobs this year.
Yeah, so the main sectors affected in order are manufacturing, services, so this includes insurance, banking and retail, as well as construction. And according to the story, factors contributing to this so-called bleak jobs outlook include the levy imposed on employers for hiring foreign workers, the increase in days for maternity leave from 60 days to 90 days, and also the EIS, the Employment Insurance System. But my question here is, why would an increase in maternity days leave have anything to do with whether or not to hire?
Because it increases business costs, right? Now, while the new mom is out of work, they have to find a replacement.
Yeah, but 90 days is
legit.
It's fine. I mean, you need to recover, right?
I don't think the dispute is not about whether this is necessary recovering workers. It's more
it's
like
business costs.
Yeah,
business
costs.
So he's saying,
I think it's a necessary cost.
Yes. And that might be an argument that can be made. But sort of moving forward on some of the other factors that are being trotted out, the employment insurance scheme, one of the more controversial schemes that we've had most recently, haven't we, Han?
Yeah, so the employment insurance scheme. So, folks, if you're not aware, be aware of this. So starting this month, 0.2% of your paycheck will be taken out for this EIS. On top of that, your employer will also contribute a matching 0.2% of your paycheck. So total contribution will be 0.4%. Now, keep in mind, though, that the maximum eligible monthly salary is capped at 4,000 ringgit. So if you make above 4,000 ringgit, at most, you'll be contributing 8 ringgit out of your paycheck. So 8 ringgit from you, another 8 ringgit from the employer, total 0.4%, 16 ringgit. Yeah.
Well, also, some people are asking whether or not this 16 ringgit maximum contribution, are employers making it a mountain out of a molehill because it's just 16 ringgit a month. But still, the cost adds up.
Per employee.
Per month.
And so, also for the employee, for us, we have to pay per month.
Right.
Yeah, so to a Penanga, it's a lot. 16 ringgit, 0.01% is still a lot in a way as well.
Okay? And I think maybe they're actually looking at the aggregate. Right?
More
you
than
take
all
these.
It's all Malaysian.
Yeah. Right. So the cost to business as a whole might be substantial.
Right. And I think it's somewhat ironic because you've got this program that's intended to be a safety net, right? This EIS. But at the same time, it's being cited as one of the factors for more job losses this year, right? Malaysians. So it's got this like roundabout twisted effect here, whereby what's supposed to save you is actually contributing to those job losses. At least,
well, so the
to
claim that's right. being made, right? And the question is, all these other costs, right? The employers' contributions to a number of different funds, including the
SOCSO, EPF,
the Human Resource Development, all these things. Does it all add up? Is that that's the total package that we should be looking at, not just the single elements in it, right?
Well, I mean, but in itself, because this is a new element, again, this just comes coming online starting January 1st, 2018, right? I mean, there was plenty of debate leading up to the rollout of EIS, and even after it was announced by the government that it's confirmed it's going to happen, there were still many people who were caught unaware as well. I even had a HR legal personnel call me and say, what on earth is this about with an MNC, mind you? So there's still all this uncertainty, but I think for us, you know, employees here in Malaysia, the principle here is this, you know, whether or not it's justified that so many of us, in fact, all of us, all 14.6 million of us employed Malaysians, at least according to the Department of Statistics numbers, right? All 14.6 million of us have to contribute to towards perhaps this 50,000. Now, just to put that 50,000 into perspective, 50,000 of 14.6 million employed, okay, that's not total labor force, that's employed, okay? That's about 0.3%. 0.3% of those employed. On top of that, if you look at the unemployment rates, all right, official figures, it's remained resilient. So that implies that the 50,000, fine, they might be unemployed, but guess what? It appears that they are being absorbed back. It's not like there's a rollover effect, you know, 50,000 from this year plus the 50,000 from last year, et cetera. You know, that may not necessarily be the case.
Well, let's look at actual job loss numbers, okay? In 2015, over 38,000 lost their jobs, and in 2016, over 37,000 Malaysian employees were laid off. And as of September 2017, 30,700 Malaysians were retrenched. However, in context, the total labour force is, as you mentioned, 14.58 million. That's as at October 2017. So the unemployment rate is still at 3.4%.
Well, I think, you know, very quickly, you know, that maybe the argument that's being made is that at this point in time, when the global economy is down and there are low growth, you know, globally, what governments ought to be doing is making it easier for businesses to expand and do better with the trickle-down effect, right? Rather than tax businesses more heavily.
Well, actually, as we have heard very often, in fact, just this morning from Vishnu Varathan of Mizuho Bank, he's the head of research, the European economy is growing stronger. The slippage in the Chinese headline GDP, that's not as bad as expected, at least now. We'll wait and see how 2018 unfolds. Granted, there are a lot of risks. Here in Malaysia as well, you've got a high base effect from 2017, but this year it's still expected to see upwards of 5% GDP growth. So there is this resilience. I would rather the government focus on more supply side policies, right? Education, ensuring that our productive capacity grows, you know,
reskilling.
Yeah, reskilling, etc. As opposed to having the masses try to subsidize a few. Keeping in mind, even if, let's say, you qualify for the EIS, okay, at most you only get 6 months payment, 6 months of 600 ringgit. That's 3,600 ringgit. Wouldn't you rather that individual be able to practice some fiscal discipline, set aside that 3,600 for a rainy day as opposed to burden everybody, all 14.6 million
and all
people.
This money that we're going to put into EIS, where's it going and you know, who's going to take care of the fund?
Well, I like the way you use fiscal discipline there, because we all know, and the stats are out, that most Malaysians don't have wherewithal to scratch
a thousand ringgit
together in an emergency. Now, 6 months, the social distress that comes from people not working for 6 months might be tremendous. We might actually, as a society, benefit from providing that 6 month buffer for them.
Sure, great point. But if you go beyond that headline of, 75% of Malaysians, 3 out of 4 Malaysians can't set aside 1,000 ringgit in an emergency.
And losing your job is an emergency
for a
breadwinner.
But if you go beyond that, do you know what the underlying cause is? The lack of financial literacy, right? You know, you've got households
and low wages.
Well, yeah, perhaps.
Or high cost?
Yeah, sure. But then, again, if you look at those guys, right? Those guys. I don't mean to be patronizing, but look, there was a story recently in the Malaysian Insight talking about the high cost of living, and they pinpoint households who are making, you know, two grand a month, and they've got 5 kids. Like, you know, how did we get there? You know what I mean?
Okay, so Hans,
why burden the childless people?
Hans is the stern father, says, you know, just buck up, young man, and then everything will be all right.
As a bias, I'm trying to shy away from added welfare. You take care of yourself. We all happy. Economy grows. Yay.
Okay.
That's simplifying it.
A bit. Okay. The oversupply in office space apparently will be here for a while, but it won't cause a market crash. So says real estate advisory firm Savills Malaysia. They said the office segment is undoubtedly weak, but it's found some level of stability.
So if office markets will have crashed, it will have happened in the last 2 years. This is according to Savills. They're saying that the oversupply is not life-threatening. And occupancy rate is at 70% currently. And according to Dato' Christopher Boyd, that Savills Malaysia's executive chairman, he said that he has seen occupancy rates go below 70% and they have recovered. So he's not troubled by that 70% occupancy rate at present.
Yeah, and also right now they are seeing 120 million square feet of office space at play right now, with more to come online. They expect 5 million square feet per year over 4 years. And the take-up rate of this incoming supply, it won't keep up, right? So take-up rate, approximately 2 million. So you got an extra 3 million that may go untenanted or unused for the next 4 years.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Bank Negara weigh in on the question of office space recently?
Yeah, Bank Negara said that occupancy rate of 76% as of first quarter 2017, that was when that was last year, and this is for office space in the Klang Valley. So Bank Negara expects occupancy rate to fall down to 68% by 2021. So by 2021, that is like 1 in 3 offices will be vacant, and 68% will far surpass levels seen during Asian financial crisis, right?
Yeah, so this is they being Bank Negara, okay? Bank Negara sees 38 million square feet of office space coming online versus, say, you know, what Seville sees, you know, about 20 million over the next 4 years. So what this means for perhaps office rental rates, this could mean downward pressure. More supply, demand still lackluster, you know, and keeping in mind that rental rates for offices here in Malaysia, according to Bank Negara, are already among the lowest in the region.
But so how are property developers responding to these facts on the ground, as it were?
Well, developers are offering rent-free periods and other concessions, some of them. And Boyd claims that despite the oversupply, office rentals have been remarkably resilient and rental rates should remain resilient in 2018. I guess it also depends on where the office space is, right? And how much supply there is in demand.
And perhaps they're also having to adapt to different trends or new trends when it comes to occupying office spaces, right? For example, Joyce, I think co-working spaces, that's picking up. So perhaps, you know, businesses are getting more efficient when it comes to them using up office space.
And this co-working space trend, right, it's not just in offices. Some of them, they're sprouting up in like retail malls and also industrial buildings. For example, I know a Common Ground, I think they're also in 1MK. So they're not taking up space in office buildings. They're taking up space in retail malls and they're renting it out as office space to people. And all these people that go to co-working spaces, right, they rent like 6 months, 8 months contract. You know, it's not long term.
Okay, now Savile also revealed their top four property picks for the year 2018. One of them is Tun Razak Exchange, which is interesting because we spoke to Co-op CEO Datuk Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad, and this is what he had to say on the Breakfast Grill recently.
We're still interested in the office space, actually. We felt that certain areas might be the one that could gain traction. For instance, a TRX area is still something that we do like because of the centrality and the location, which is well connected with good underground and public transport as well. Based on the asset allocation, our investments in the property space, domestic market in particular, we are still well short of our target. Yes, we do take note of the situation of oversupply that has been highlighted by the regulator. But generally, I think property, it's a very niche market. We know some certain areas that still there is still demand for it.
That was Co-op CEO Datuk Wan Kamaruzaman Wan Ahmad.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, TRX is certainly shaking off any kind of legacy or baggage issues from that 1MDB saga there. So why TRX? Savills quickly says that TRX will emerge as the most successful commercial development in Malaysia for 2018. They already have HSBC, Prudential, Lendlease, all in the TRX fold, right? So according to Savills, they see TRX being the or having the fastest development pace in 10 years, outpacing what we have seen in Bangsar South, you know, KL City Centre, Mid Valley City, KL Central, etc.
Well, Savills, there are other three top property picks for 2018 are properties adjacent to MRT, logistics-related industrial properties and retail properties.
Okay. We're coming up to the top of the hour and then we'll have the bulletin. We'll be back with the opening numbers of the stock market. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.